Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering in this audio Genesis chapter 8, verses 1 through 14, which I will entitle The Flood Subsides. Our context is this. In Genesis 7, the first 12 verses, Noah loaded the ark, and then the waters came from the sky, the rain from the subterranean waters under the earth, and the flood began. In verses 13 and 24, Genesis 7, the flood waters covered the earth. Now we're going to see how the world is started again, recreated after the flood is over. We start with verse 1 in Genesis 8. God remembered Noah as well as all the wildlife and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. God caused a wind to pass over the earth and the water began to subside. Now when it says God remembered Noah, this doesn't merely mean a call to mind. Obviously God doesn't need to remember anything. He knows everything all to start with. But it also means to express concern for and to act with loving care towards. For example, remember me in my will. That doesn't mean just mental cognition. It means do something for me. So God remembered Noah in the sense that he had concern for him. Why? Well, Noah had just gone through something that was not the easiest thing in the world. A worldwide flood, assuming it was worldwide. That's pretty rough to go through. Now, God caused a wind to pass over the earth, it says here in verse 1, and the water began to subside. Now, it doesn't say that the wind caused the water to subside, but it implies it. Now, that creates a problem because, as local flutters like to say, this wind could not be global. Winds cannot blow over the globe at the same time, say the local flutters, the old earthers, and my query to that is, why not? Why can't the wind blow everywhere at the same time? That doesn't bother me. But here's a more substantial argument against the global flood. The water would evaporate. It would saturate the clouds. Then it would fall to earth again. And then that would cause the waters to rise again, perpetuating the flood. But if you have a local flood, the evaporated water would be carried by winds to another dry location where the rains would fall and not exacerbate the local flood. Well, how would global flutters answer this? And I must confess, after a relatively thorough search on the internet, I couldn't find an answer to that. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but I couldn't find it. So I'll just speculate here that even though the verse says the winds blew over the earth, the verse does not say the winds caused the earth, caused the waters to recede. What could have caused that? Well, the earthquakes and all that were probably going on during the flood would make some parts of the earth rise, there's your steep mountains and such, and then other parts of the earth would sink, and then the waters would run from the high lands to the basins that the earthquakes have created, and the tectonic shifts and so forth have created, and so the water would run down into the basins, then that would mean that the dry land would be separated from the waters again, just like in the original creation week. That, to me, is the easiest way to answer, but maybe there's a scientific way to answer it, too, that I haven't found yet. Now, let's talk about something literary here. There are a series of literary parallels between chapters 1, the creation week, and chapters 8 and 9, Noah's flood. This is very interesting because the whole point of Noah's flood is to show that God is starting over. He's recreating the earth. Mankind, you have screwed it up so bad, I can't let it go on like this. You're going to wipe out humanity. So I'm starting over. In Genesis 1, 2, we read, "Now the earth was formless and empty, darkness covering the surface of the watery depths, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters." Now remember, Spirit is Ruach, which is also wind. It can be translated either way. "So the Spirit of God, or the wind of God, was hovering over the surface of the waters." Well, you notice here, in the account of Noah's flood, chapter 8, verse 1, God caused a wind to pass over the earth. So there's a wind blowing over the earth, Ruach, in Genesis 8, 1, and in Genesis 1, 2, we've got the Spirit of God hovering over the surface of the waters, an almost exact parallel. Now, if that one doesn't convince you, let me read you a lot of other parallels between creation week and Noah's flood. Genesis 1, 7, creation. "So God made the expanse and separated the water," the expanse is the sky, "and separated the water under the expanse from the water above the expanse." That's the water on the seas and the waters in the clouds. "And so it was so." We go from creation week to Noah's flood. Genesis 8, 2, "The sources of the watery depths and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky stopped." So there you have mention of the watery depths, the water on the earth, and then you have the mention of the water above the earth, the rain from the sky. We look at Creation Week in Genesis 1:9 to find another literary parallel. Then God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. Genesis 8:5, and Noah's flood, the water continued to recede until the 10th month, and the 10th month on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were visible. So the water is separating from the land in the account of Noah's flood as well as in the account of Creation Week. We look in Genesis 1:20. During the creation week, then God said, "Let the water swarm with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky." Genesis 8:7, in the account of Noah's flood, and he, Noah, sent out a raven. It went back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. So in the creation week, Genesis 1:20, we see birds flying above the earth. In Genesis 8:7, we see a raven flying back and forth over the earth, above the earth. Genesis 1:25 in the creation week. So God made the wildlife of the earth according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all of the creatures that crawl on the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. So we have wildlife created. We have livestock, tame animal life created. And then we got the creepy crawlers created. Same thing in Noah's flood. Genesis 8:17. Bring out all the living creatures that are with you. Birds, they're the birds. Well, birds weren't mentioned in Genesis 1:25, but livestock and creepy crawlers are mentioned. They will spread over the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So you see the creatures are being created again, if you will, as they come out of Noah's Ark, just like they were during creation week. We look at the first part of Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. God blessed them, Adam and Eve, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it." We look in Genesis 9:1. In the account of Noah's flood, and we see that God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." That's a pretty close parallel right there. We look at Genesis 1:28b, the second part of the verse. We read this. God tells Adam, "Rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every creature that crawls on the earth." Genesis 9:2, God tells Noah, "The fear and terror of you will be in every living creature on the earth, every bird of the sky, and every creature that crawls on the ground, and all the fish of the sea. They are placed under your authority." So God gives Noah authority over birds and animals and fish and everything that crawls on the ground. Same thing Adam had. Parallels between Adam's sovereignty and dominion and rule are very close to Noah's sovereignty, dominion and rule. We look at Genesis 1:30. "For all the wildlife of the earth, for every bird of the sky, and for every creature that crawls on the earth, everything having the breath of life in it, I have given every green plant for food." So God feeds the vegetables to the animals, to the wildlife, to the birds, and to the creepy crawlers. Genesis 9:3, same thing. "Every creature that lives and moves will be food for you," God says to Noah. "As I gave the green plants, I have given you everything." Every creature that lives and moves, that sort of covers birds, creepy crawlers, everything that has the breath of life, wildlife. In the creation account, they had green food to eat, and Noah's and his descendants had green foods to eat also. So, to summarize all that, chapter 1, the creation week, describes the original beginning of the planet. Chapters 8 and 9 describe a new beginning for the planet after the flood. Now, what are some of the options as to this wind that blew over the sea? It could have been stormy and blustery, violent even, like a hurricane, like a typhoon. John Gill says, no, that would have endangered the ark. John Gill suggests rather it was a gentle, hot, drying wind. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that it was a hot wind. I don't know what kind it was. That's just speculation. We go now to Genesis 8, verses 2 through 5. "The sources of the watery depths and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky stopped. The water steadily receded from the earth, and by the end of 150 days, the waters had decreased significantly. The ark came to rest in the seventh month on the 17th day of the month on the mountains of Ararat. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month. In the 10th month on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were visible." So now we get into the recession of the waters of the flood. There are some questions to where those waters went, and I've already mentioned, I think, that they went into the cracks in the ground and the depressed areas of the ground caused by earthquakes, which were, I think, rampant back then. In fact, it was probably earthquakes that caused the water to spring out of the earth to start with, when the waters came out of the earth. 40 days of rain is not enough to cause a worldwide flood. Now, this, the end of 150 days, of course, you could say at the end of the stopping of the rain or the end of the beginning of the 40 days of rain, Exodus and Genesis timeline, which is going to be the one I'm using because that can be controversial. But just to keep things simple, I'm going to use their timeline and take their word for it. They say that the flood receded 150 days after the rains began, not stopped. And since we're getting into a lot of mention of days and time frames and time periods in these next several verses, the question arises, well, how long did the whole flood event last? Well, people disagree. Some people say exactly 365. Some say 370-something. It all depends on how you interpret the words. But I like this gentleman. I don't know who wrote this. This was an Answers in Genesis article. He said the best answer is about 1 year, and that's true. It's somewhere around a year. So Noah went through a bad year, but he got saved. Got to start the world over again. Now, the waters began to recede, as we read in our verse, chapter 8, verse 3. The water steadily receded from the earth. It was a gradual process. And then the ark rested on the top of a mountain. It says mountains of Ararat. Ararat is not just one mountain, it's a range. This is very typical. When people name mountains, they name a peak and then they name the range around the peak. So we have a continual recession of the waters of the flood. Because we see in verse 5, it says continued. The waters continued to recede. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that means the waters receded gradually. So that must have taken a lot of patience as they sat there on the ark and waited. Genesis 8, verses 6 through 7. After 40 days, Noah opened the window of the ark that he had made, and he sent out a raven. It went back and forth until the waters had dried up from the earth. Now, this window, of course, probably came from that 18-inch, one-cubit space between the overhang of the roof and the top extent of the wall of the ark. The window might have had a cover on it to keep the rain out. I wouldn't be surprised. That'd be easy for him to do, and he probably opened up the cover, and there's the window, and he sent out a raven. The raven went back and forth until the waters had dried up from the earth. Now, what does that mean, went back and forth? Well, it probably means he went out, couldn't find a place to land, came back on the ark. Noah sent him out again. The raven goes all over the place, can't find any place to stay, so he comes back to the ark. Now, the verse doesn't say that the raven finally stayed gone and didn't come back. Now, some people think that's what the raven did. Went, found a place to stay, and didn't come back. So Noah says, okay, well, now I'm going to use a dove. The raven hadn't come back, but I'm still not quite sure yet. I look around. All I see is water. Maybe I better send out a dove. Well, that's possible, but the text does not actually say that, as Adam Clark says. In fact, Clark says it means exactly the opposite, and Answers in Genesis agrees. The raven kept flying back and forth to the ark, always returning to the ark, not staying gone, but coming back. And that might be a reason Noah sent out the dove next. He says, I'm tired of you, raven. Maybe the dove could find a resting place and some dry land better than you can. All speculation, of course. We go to Genesis 8, verses 8 through 12. Then he sent out a dove to see whether the water of the earth's surface had gone down. But the dove found no resting place for her foot. Now, this is the first sending of a dove. There were three sendings of a dove. We're going to assume they're the same dove. We don't know. That's speculation. This first sending out of the dove is day 271 since the waters started raining on the earth, since the flood began. That's the Answers in Genesis timeline, day 271. So that dove comes out. Can't find anything, so we go to verse 10. So Noah waited 7 more days and sent out the dove from the ark again. And it's probably the same dove leaves. So this is day 278. 7 days later, the dove goes back. Now this dove, the second dove, brought back an olive leaf. What does that tell Noah? Well, Noah knew that olives didn't grow at a high elevation, so Noah knew that the water had descended a long way down from the tops of the mountains. And by the way, the modern symbol of peace, of an olive branch and a dove's beak, you see a lot of times with these people that are longing for peace without Jesus, they use an olive branch and a dove's beak. Now Noah, and this is my opinion, I don't believe Noah was probably not trying to get the dove to return an olive branch. He was probably trying to send the dove out there to not return at all so that he would know the dove found a place to live, which would mean dry land. And he didn't get what he wanted, but he did get an olive branch, was a preliminary indication there's some life down there at the lower levels of the mountains. Good deal. But it's still not enough to get out of the ark yet, so he sends out a dove the third time. Let me read that. Well, at the end of verse 11, the scripture says this, so Noah knew that the water on the earth's surface had gone down. Why? Because olives grow at lower elevations. Verse 12, after he, Noah, had waited another 7 days, he sent out the dove, but she did not return to him again. So this is the third dove that sent out, probably the same dove, the third instance. That dove didn't turn back, so that means the dove found a place to live, which means there must be some dry ground somewhere. That third dove was sent out on day 285, according to the Answers in Genesis timeline. We go now to Genesis 8, 13 through 14. In the 601st year, that's the 601st year of Noah's life. Noah is 600 years when all this started at the beginning of chapter 7, I think it was. So this is the 601st year of Noah's life in the first month, on the first day of the month. The water that had covered the earth was dried up. Then Noah removed the ark's cover and saw that the surface of the ground was drying. On the 27th day of the second month, the earth was dry. Now notice that the earth, the water was dried up on the first day of the month, the first day of the first month. That is typically when people are making calendars. That's the first day of the year, the first day of the first month. That is the first day of the year. And so the idea that, hey, this is mankind's new beginning after the flood, according to the NIV Study Bible, it's New Year's Day, January the 1st, first year, first month. And of course, I'm being anachronistic there by mentioning January. They didn't reckon dates that way. In fact, the way they're reckoning dates here, 601st year of Noah's life. Now in verse 13, Noah removed the ark's cover and saw that the surface of the ground was drying. This is Holman Christian Study Bible translation. The NIV says dry, but drying is better, and I'll show you why here in just a minute. The Answers in Genesis timeline says that here, at the point that Noah removed the ark's cover, Noah saw that the surface, emphasized surface of the earth, was dry. In other words, the earth was in the process of drying. The surface of the ground was dry or drying. But in verse 14, 56, 57 days later, by the 27th day of the second month of Noah's life, the earth was dry. So there was a process of time there, 56 or 57 days later, between verses 13 and 14. On verse 13, on the first month, first day, Noah removes the ark and sees the ground is in the process of drying. 56 days later, he sees that it's dry. When the earth was in the process of drying, it was probably so full of slime that it was impossible to walk on or live on. So the Holman Christian Study Bible translation of drying in verse 13, in the process of drying, continuous tense there, in verse 14, dry, it's finished drying. And that difference between drying at first sight and completely dry 56 days later, that difference is also not only emphasized by the difference in tense, but by the difference in the Hebrew word. The word for dry in verse 14 is a stronger word for dry than the Hebrew word in verse 13. Now, here's what John Gill says about what Noah saw when he opened up the cover of the ark. The ground or surface of the earth looked dry, but not so dry and hard as to bear heavy bodies or the foot to tread on it, being soft and tender through the water so long upon it, and had left mud and slime, not yet sufficiently hardened by the wind and sun to walk upon. And so that is why Noah had to wait 56 or 57 days from the day that he first saw that the waters had gone until the time that he actually got out of the ark and walked out. Now this cover that he looked at, that he took off the top in order to look at the ground around him, John Gill says it was perhaps just a board or two so he could get a chance to stick his head up and look around, or maybe it was a covering of skins that hung over the edge. Who knows? But whatever it was, it allowed him to look. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm now finished with chapter 8, verses 1 through 14, the flood subsides. In our next audio, Genesis 8, verses 15 through 22, we're going to look at God's covenant with Noah, that famous Noahic covenant with the rainbow, seed time and harvest and all that. We'll take that up in the next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.